It's only an hour. It's Jeff. It's Jordan. Jordan, let's go ahead and start, man, unless you got something else that's top of mind. The Terrence Brooks news broke. We're recording a Longhorn Blitz podcast, and I had, again, this whole line of thinking on where I was going with the Blitz yesterday, and about literally five minutes in, the Terrence Brooks news pops, and he's heading to the portal. We talked about this yesterday, man, and look, you're going to hear a couple different sides of a story, I'm sure, on how this happened or why this happened, but Jordan, I'm reading the tea leaves, kind of putting everything together. I think it's some version of Terrence Brooks was going to have to continue to compete for that job, and it wasn't going to be necessarily given to him. He wasn't going to be pinned in like Manny Muhammad is. And I think that probably whatever happens, whatever tone the conversation took with he and Sark, I'm pretty sure it started there and then got to where it did.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, I'm always in the middle of doing something whenever I first get on. I'm sure.
All right, man. I think everybody knows you and I have this
tweet
out. Business at Horns 24/7. You more than me, because on that recruiting beat, man, trust me, whenever that phone rings, whenever that text comes in, you gotta answer it, because it could be news. But yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. I know Chip is working on detailing some things in the Insider for tomorrow, but that's just my hunch. One, what info we've got, just me knowing how these things typically work. I think the kernel of truth is in there, and then where it unraveled is really where you're going to kind of get into different versions, if you will.
Yeah. Sorry, I got my tweet up. But yeah, I mean, look, what everyone is reporting is essentially the same thing, because, I mean, yeah, that's what happened. Whenever you have kind of unanimous reporting across the market, then that means that's what happened. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yeah. I don't know how much there is to say about Terrence Brooks. He obviously can't transfer into the SEC unless he's going to have to sit out a year, which I don't think anyone is going to do.
Right.
So quite honestly, I'm really interested to see where he's going to end up. The corner market isn't great right now, but I mean, at the same time, like, and none of the markets are great right now.
Yeah.
for any of the positions. So really interested to see where he ends up. And also, like, if you remember, he was committed to Ohio State and they flipped him. And a big help with that was Ryan Watts, too, from Little Elm, who also was at Little Elm, was at Ohio mm-hmm. State at one point. Obviously, he actually played there. Terrence didn't play there.
But, yeah.
Yeah. So
Ohio State's kind of loaded. I mean, you know, if you're thinking from an NIL standpoint, and you're a team that feels they have a chance to win a conference championship or potentially get into the playoff, you know, I think Michigan would be intrigued with the potential, and I don't know what Michigan's depth chart completely looks like, but a Terrence Brooks, Will Johnson combination at corner. It's probably something that I think would excite Michigan fans. Florida State, anytime a former big-time recruit is in the portal, it seems like Florida State and Mike Norvell are right in the middle of it. What do you think? Clemson, I think, is probably another one that could be looking to add a piece. But you got to think it's either Big 12, Big 10, ACC, or Notre Dame that is going to – if Terrence Brooks wants to stay in a power conference, that's where it's going to be, because, like you said, I don't – being a junior going into a draft eligible season, I don't think he's going to want to sit out a year at an SEC program.
No, definitely. If Terrence Brooks goes to the SEC, I don't even know what I'd do, because that's just so unrealistic in my opinion.
Yeah.
And Kai Woods, baby, Jeff Choate is a monster.
Dude, I laughed so hard at that. And I like Jeff Choate a lot. Good dude. But yeah, man, he's, you know,
I mean, I don't know about you, but I can guarantee you Kai Woods, there's no way he won't be the worst running back in Nevada.
No, not like we talked about it yesterday, man. I think there are a lot of G5s where he could go in and be not, man, I'm not saying he'd be a 1,000-yard rusher, but he'd be a contributor. And, yeah. You know, Kai Woods strikes me as one of those dudes that if I'm Choate and I'm trying to get my culture established at a new gig, Kai Woods is the perfect kind of dude that I want. A guy that walked on at Texas, did it the hard way, And, you know, he brought some guys with him. We talked about Jacquez Smith, Joey Thomas that were actually on Sark's staff. Keaton Crawford went there. So, hell yeah, man. If I'm choked and I'm bringing somebody from that good culture at Texas that has been around a championship culture, knows what it's like to win a conference championship, knows what it's like to be involved on a team that's been to the college football playoff. Hell yeah, I'll take that dude.
Yeah. And yeah, I don't know. I think he's going to contribute for sure.
Yeah.
I don't see Jeff Choate doing that just to do it.
No. But
yeah. And Jake, as far as the corner from Arizona, Takario Davis, he entered the portal with a non-contact tag. So per NCAA rules, only he can reach out to Texas for that to, you know, but I don't know. We'll see. To be honest with you, I remember when he first entered that there was like speculation where he was going because he had the non-contact tag, but I think it's taken longer than everyone expected. So I need to look into that. He's obviously one of Nansen's former players, but with the non-contact tag, things are a little tricky, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, we know it's the portal. We know it's the Wild West. So I guess we'll see how much that'll matter. But, I mean, look, you got Gavin Holmes, who is a bigger vet than anyone else on the roster at corner. Has played more college football snaps on the roster than anyone at corner. You have Malik Muhammad coming back, obviously.
Who's your number one corner?
Yeah.
Muhammad's your number one corner.
Yeah, and will be your number one corner in his second year. So, yeah. And then what Malik Muhammad is, and I'm not trying to say this now just because, like, he left and I'm trying to kick the dead horse or anything like that. What Malik Muhammad is what everyone wanted Terrence Brooks to be or expected Terrence Brooks to be as, like, the elite shutdown number one corner that claims a spot as a sophomore.
It's fair.
That's what Malik Muhammad is. And
Warren Roberson.
Warren Roberson. Jeez. Didn't have the flashiest spring game, but was solid. And I like him a lot. You know, Junkyard Dog, he's, you know, in the SEC, you're going to need corners that aren't going to be afraid to have to come up and just get destroyed by a first-round offensive tackle or to just come up and disrupt run lanes. Warren Roberson can do that. He's a dog. He doesn't – the way I saw that kid hit people in high school, I don't think he cares about his body all too much, right?
Yeah.
So you need guys like that that are okay with, like, setting an edge, basically, in the run and also just coming off blocks because almost no one wants to do that. That's what makes Malik Muhammad so great. At the rare times he struggled at pass coverage, he'd make up for it because he would just go destroy someone on a screen.
I think that's corners, period, Jordan, because, like, I know Chris Boyd, when he was at Texas, took his share of criticism for getting beat and whatnot, but – Chris Boyd played that position the way it needs to be played, which is with no fear. There's a difference between playing with no fear and playing reckless. And Chris Boyd just played that position with no fear. Like, I get beat. All right, it's fine. I get right back up and compete the next play. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I see a lot of people asking, you know, Kobe Black, Wardell Mack, would they be ready? Wardell Mack, I really don't think so, at least ready to be a major contributor year one. I think Kobe Black could maybe be one by the end of the season, but right now, no. But could he come along towards the end of the season where he's seeing increased snaps each week? I could see that happening with Kobe Black, though. Not necessarily Wardell Mack. And then the other, you know, true corner they signed in the 24 class, Santana Wilson, he won't be on campus for a couple more weeks. So he's not even realistic to even talk about for that.
Well, just anytime you're talking about, you know, a summer enrollee, it's weird because at this point, those guys used to be the guys that got to campus early. Now you're behind the eight ball if you're a summer enrollee. So Jake brings up the point I was going to make is what becomes of what do you do with Jahdae Barron? I think it's funny. I think selfishly, Jordan, the guy that benefits the most from this is going to be Jahdae because all he's got to do is be like, oh, you guys have a opening for a corner. Do you some corner reps that need to get distributed? I can take some of those. I think between Jahdae and Jahdae's being able to play corner and Jalen Gilboa at the star, I think it's not it's probably not the best combination. Like, if you ask Terry Joseph and PK, it's probably not the best combination they would have wanted to put out there. But there are worse combinations you could have than Jhadae Barron and Manny Muhammad at corner with Jalen Gilboa at star. So where does Jhadae play? I think he can – him getting more work at corner now is a much more realistic option than it was in January.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, it was kind of hard to talk about because I was kind of restricted at the time back in January, but like now it's fine. A big reason why Jhadae comes back is because the NFL does not give a shit about nickel cornerbacks. They just don't. They have absolutely no market. They get screwed in free agency every year. They get screwed in the draft every year. So Jhadae basically was like, I'm just going to come back and I want to be a full-time corner. And Texas is like, look, we will let you play corner, but you're out of your mind if you think it's full-time. We know you don't want to play star, but you're still the best star on the roster. We're going to need you at star sometime this year.
Yeah.
So that was what was kind of told to him in January. So, you know, months later, now that Brooks is in the portal and things look a little bit different in Austin, he's going to play corner. There's no way he's not playing more snaps at corner, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe if they wanted to talk to him and be like, hey, we think we're at our best when you're at star. Can we make Gilbo a regular corner? Maybe, but I don't see that happening. And then I guess, CB, to answer your question, the Colorado DB who's in the portal, Cormani McClain, I don't know why he threw the Texas graphic in the Hayes Fossa logo, but it made Hank and I have to – yeah, I hate that shit. Whenever stuff like that happens, it's like you just have to go to your source with your tail tucked and be like, hey, this isn't real, right? I just have to. And they're always like, dude, fuck no.
So, you wind up chasing your tail, you know?
Yeah, so that's basically what it was with Cormani McClain. But it's like, look, we're going to check for y'all, but we kind of knew what the answer was and got it told to us pretty quickly. So, yeah, they're not going to be interested in Cormani McClain, or at least – I'd be more surprised if Cormani McClain ends up at Texas than if Terrence Brooks ends up at an SEC school in the portal. You go.
Both very low probabilities. But it's funny. I like to, you know, take things apart, figure out how they work, kind of get to the everybody knows the what, but I want to know the why. And on things like this, and really kind of dig into it. Not so much why Terrence Brooks left, but now that you've got the kind of the aftermath of it. Okay, how do you start to take this apart, and what does it look like? And I say that to say, if you're Sark, I wonder if Sark looked at that like, look, we're going to rest Jhadae this spring, and knowing what they felt like they needed to get out of Terrence Brooks, and saying, look, basically, Terrence Brooks has 15 practices to go nail down this job. If he doesn't, then either Gavin Holmes has pushed him and has made this a competition, and or we've got the Jhadae to corner card in our back pocket if we need to play it come August. So either way, I mean, I know that's kind of a very, very macro way to look, or very micro way to look at it. But I think if you're Sark, Sark hasn't left too much to chance since he took the job. So I wouldn't be shocked, Jordan, if they looked at it that way. Like, we'll let Terrence Brooks see if he can get it together in these 15 practices. If not, we're going to tell him, hey, the competition's open, and not only are you competing against Gavin Holmes, but this summer in a camp, you're going to be competing against Jhadae for snaps.
Yeah, so.
And I think it's worth mentioning, too. Everybody in that corner room should have got the message, because they didn't go after Jabbar Muhammad in the portal just for, you know, S's and giggles. I mean, they wanted Jabbar Muhammad. They felt like they could upgrade the depth and talent at the position with him.
And what did Jabbar Muhammad want?
Wanted to start.
A starting spot. And the money was never an issue. And, like, look, I get it. I always get it as coaches. You can't tell someone they're guaranteed a starter. You just can't. But you're out of your mind if Jabbar Muhammad is starting at Texas next year. You know what I mean? So, look, retroactively, everyone can look back now, and it's easy to just be like, why didn't you just tell Jabbar Muhammad you could start? But at the time, you can't do that. You can't do that. That's just kind of how those things work. So, Yeah. So if Jabbar Muhammad goes in the portal out of nowhere, I don't think anyone will be surprised. Which, speaking of the portal, you see Bryce Foster's now in there.
Man, that is
very interesting times in College Station, man.
It feels like, does it feel like the Elko staff kind of pushed him out?
I think that's what happened, kind of.
It's weird, though, right? Like,
yeah.
Bryce Foster's still a good player, unless I'm just.
So his freshman year.
Off my rocker.
His freshman year, he was fucking amazing.
Freshman All-American, dude. Him and Deuce Fathery was at the 20. That was the COVID year, wasn't it?
Nah, he was 2021. Or was it
21? Okay. So it was
Bryce Foster's freshman year, he was damn good.
Yeah, him and Deuce Fathery were freshman All-Americans. And
his sophomore year, the coach left for USC and they hired Steve Adazio.
And
everything started going like that. And then he also got hurt in like the fourth or fifth game, and I believe missed the rest of the season. But with him, he's also he's going to throw the shot put in the Olympics. I'm pretty sure he's like that good at the shot put. But I know every single year he's been at A&M, he's missed like all of their spring football stuff. And it's because he's with the track team. And I think it sounds like reading the tea leaves of A&M fans on Twitter. I really just said that. I do think that they pushed him out. That's what it looks like. At the same time, though, you look at their other centers and it's like, whoa, why the hell would you do that? And then you realize they got a kid out of Utah.
Yeah.
That had started, I think, a year or two or maybe three. So, look, it makes sense. Another kid that they, I think, pushed out was Bobby Taylor. He was part of that 2022 class. He helped them a lot with recruiting. He actually was going to go in the portal in December, and then I remember him posting on a story that wasn't his choice, and then he came out of the portal. But now it appears he's walked away from football and is going to stay a regular student at A&M. Apparently that's the latest on Bobby Taylor. So from my point of view, I really just think A&M is making room. I know they were way over the scholarship count, just like Texas was at one point. Mm-hmm. They had it worse. They were in the 90s, I'm pretty sure. Texas only ever got to 89. So, yeah. But very interesting. And interested to see what his market is, too. You know, with everyone kind of knowing his main focus could be shot put or whatnot.
If I'm a school like
West Virginia,
what?
Go get the mountain to be a mountaineer.
Dude, if I'm a Big 12 school, period, I'm on the phone with Bryce Foster as soon as I can.
Yeah, I bet Jerry Maguire would actually like kill someone for a Bryce Foster.
Dude.
in the tech staff. They're like, you can throw the shot put to the moon. Come on, man.
Yeah, Rex is right. I mean, you're probably gonna see another guy or two go into the portal. The exit interview should be, we're Wednesday. It should be wrapping up here soon. So yeah, I think you'll see a couple guys go into, because you know we talked about the guys that have already gone in. You know, that wave of like Jamon Tapp and you know Zach Swanson, those guys. They knew where they were on the depth chart, and it's like, all right, I might as well get a head start on figuring out what's next. You know, guys like Terrence Brooks, and I think guys that go into the portal now are like a Bryce Foster. It's either, I think those are the guys that, let's call it what it is, man. You're being pushed out, or you're being told information from the staff that you probably weren't ready to hear. So now you'd probably decide, let's go see if the grass is greener somewhere else. So it's the guys probably that didn't anticipate necessarily going into the portal that are heading there now.
For sure. So we got Nick in the waiting room now.
Oh, he's in the waiting room? All right.
Yeah. So we're going to bring him in.
Let me introduce our guest. Good dude. Longtime friend of Jordan. Friend of mine. Proud to be a part of this guy's career. I didn't do a whole lot, but he's part of the Horns 24/7 family. You find him on Twitter at @NickHarrisDC. DallasCowboys.com. An employee of the, make sure you say it right, Jordan, the 5-time world champion Dallas Football Cowboys. It's Nick Harris. Nick, it's good to see you, man.
Hey, what's going on, guys? I appreciate y'all having me on. What's going on?
Yeah. So let's get right into it, man. The Cowboys have 24 in the draft tomorrow. We're 30 some odd hours now away from the draft. It seems like one of the safer bets that one of the tackles that they probably like is going to be there. All the intel you've gotten, your gut, is it offensive tackle or bust for the Cowboys tomorrow at 24?
Not necessarily offensive tackle, but offensive line or bust. I think they're expecting a certain level of chaos more so than what they've expected over the course of the last several draft cycles. You know, typically around this time, they have a guesstimation of how certain teams are going to pick above them, what trades could potentially happen in front of them, and a certain number of guys that might be available for them at their pick. In this instance here at 24, there's a lot of elements of chaos that could happen. I mean, let's just look outside of the potential trades in the top 10. Whoever moves up to grab J.J. McCarthy. Yeah. You also have the Eagles that are looking to trade up and potentially grab a corner. You also have to factor in the Broncos, the fact that they could be trading back and maybe looking more so for one of those quarterbacks that might be slipping there in the late first round. And then whoever's picking there at 23, I'd be shocked if it's the Minnesota Vikings. And that's right before the Cowboys pick. They have to be able to factor in who exactly that might be. In my mock, I have it being the Chargers. The Chargers are able to trade back from 5. They pick up 11 and 23. And 23, they're able to circle back and maybe get a tackle. So if you're the Cowboys, you have to factor all of that in. And then on the same token, factor in the sense that you might be able to trade back as well. I think that's a realistic opportunity. But you look at center Graham Barton out of Duke, I think that would be probably the safe pick if he's on the board at 24. But if he's off the board, I think you're probably looking at a trade back scenario for the Cowboys.
You got something, Jordan?
Yeah, so how high are the chances you see Cowboys maybe trading up?
I don't think they trade up. You look at the picks that they have this year. They gave up their fourth-round pick for Trey Lance to your beautiful San Francisco 49ers, Jordan. And their fifth-round pick they gave up in the trade for Brandon Cooks last year as well. Their sixth-round pick they gave up in a trade for Jonathan Hankins the year before that. So missing a lot of those middle round picks, granted they were able to get a comp pick in the fifth and a comp pick in the sixth, but no fourth round pick, and they have a lot of needs that they need to fill. So if they were to trade up, they couldn't package anything from this year because they need all of those picks. They would probably have to sacrifice future capital, and this team doesn't like doing that necessarily. I think in their eyes, if they could trade back and pick up some of those middle round picks, that'd be ideal for them right now.
Yeah, Nick, you kind of, you know, your intro kind of stole one of the big questions I was going to ask you, because it seems like every year in the draft, pretty much once you get to kind of those wild card teams, when they start picking kind of in the late teens, early 20s, kind of to the mid 20s, maybe even the late 30s, you've got teams that are kind of jostling there, trying to move up, some trying to move back. And then once you get to where the Cowboys are, to your point, now you've got teams that are thinking, all right, if there's a quarterback there like Denver, if they want, you know, I know they've been linked to Bo Nix pretty heavily. Is that the point where you want to try to trade back into the first round to maybe get a quarterback? So I like that you said there's more. There's typically volatility where the Cowboys are right now, but yeah. I'm with you. There's a lot there. Is it pretty safe to say that if one of those quarterbacks, if whatever happens with J.J. McCarthy, I think we think it probably could be quarterbacks going 1, 2, 3, 4. If one of those quarterbacks slides or a team that wants McCarthy can't get a deal done, is that the point where probably all hell breaks loose in this draft?
Yeah, probably so. And then you also have to start factoring in the fact that a lot of teams are tackle needy and a lot of teams are getting on the phones trying to move up to go grab one of these tackles. And I think the Cowboys are in a position where they might see all those tackles come off the board, even guys that they maybe would not have taken at 24. I think that's a realistic scenario as well. I think that's why you look at Graham Barton out of Duke, and that's probably a more realistic scenario. Also, you talk about the quarterbacks and potentially a team coming in from the second round to grab their guy. Also, look at the receiver position as well. You look at Kansas City at 32, Buffalo that's there at 28, I believe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Both of those teams, they need receivers. You can make the argument that the Ravens might need to add a guy as well at 30. Those are the teams that you probably will be looking to make a deal with there at 24. The Kansas City deal is probably the one that I would like the most, because you can move back to 32 and probably pick up a third and a fourth round pick from them and still be able to get Jordan Morgan out of Arizona, who's a tackle guard flex, has a lot of durability, 40 plus games of starting experience. I think that's a great scenario for the Cowboys as well.
To me, Nick, it seems like I agree with you on Graham Barton. If the group of safe as a draft pick can be, he seems like one of the safer picks in this draft. But with these tackles, it seems like none of these guys are just slam dunk, can't miss. I mean, even you look at a guy like Joe Alt, even people have some questions about Joe Alt. you feel like the Cowboys have these tackles, whether it's Mims or Guyton or whoever, you feel like they've kind of got them all grouped together. And hey, if Barton's off the board and there's one there that we like, we feel comfortable taking any of, you know, 3, 4, 5 guys at that spot.
Yeah, I think if they're – so I've been mentioning it on our draft show this week. I think if there's three certain guys other that could be available there at 24, and if they're not, they probably get on the phone. I mentioned Graham Barton. Also, Troy Faltanu out of Washington, who's mm-hmm. probably more of a guard at the next level, but played tackle for the Huskies. Texas fans are probably familiar with, unfortunately. And then three, J.C. Latham out of Alabama. I think if one of those three guys are on the board there at 24, they pick. If they don't, they move back. But you look at Amarius Mims, you look at Tyler Guyton, there's cons to both of those guys that I think might push the Cowboys away from making a pick there at 24 on either of those guys. Mims is the starting experience and not having a ton to be able to bring to the NFL from an experience standpoint. I mean, he played at a 2A school in Georgia and then only played 8 games for the Bulldogs. And there's not a lot to be able to pull from there. He has a lot of learning that he still has to do. And there's a lot of the same things you could say about Tyler Guyton. Only one season of starting experience at right tackle for the Sooners. He was originally a defensive tackle out of Manor. So being able to flip onto the offensive side of the ball, play that tackle position, still learning and still developing. Now, his ceiling is probably higher than some of these other guys, but the Cowboys need a guy that can come in and play now. And I think if they're going into the draft with that mindset, then Tyler Guyton is probably not an option there.
What you got, Jordan?
Yeah, so I know, you know, we talk a lot, obviously, and it sounds like you're kind of the draft guy of all the guys you work with. So I guess just go through the group of guys coming out of Texas, this draft class, you know, deepest draft class we'll see from Texas since I don't know when. I know you're big on Jay Brooks. You know, he's your boy. You covered him when he was in high school. But besides him, are there any other guys you're super high on out of Texas?
Yeah, Jonathan Brooks, man. If he's there at 56, he will be picked by the Dallas Cowboys. I think that is a slam dunk, probably the safest pick you could probably make. I think for me, I don't think he's there at 56, though. I think a team takes him in the 40s or the early 50s.
Wow.
Only one time in the modern draft era has the first running back come off the board after 56. And as of right now, that's looking like what Jonathan Brooks will do. He'll probably be that first back off the board. So a running back team, a needy team, would need to take a Trey Benson or a Jalen Wright above Jonathan Brooks for him to slip to 56. But talking about the Texas draft class, man, going to the Texas Pro Day, it was so fun to see those guys and also see all the talent that they had on display. I mean, we can talk about Byron Murphy. He was another guy I covered in high school with Mike Roach and, man, playing defensive tackle at DeSoto. It was so funny. Back then, he would draw Aaron Donald comparisons because he's more of a short, stout, swole guy. But me and Mike were always like, you can't compare a high school kid to Aaron Donald. Like, we can't be doing this. But now this kid's about to go top 15 in the draft, and he's fulfilling all of those expectations, at least up to this point. And he's probably going to go be a phenomenal three tech in the NFL and probably the Rams or the Buccaneers or something like that. So high ceiling for him. I think he's got a bright future in front of him. T'Vondre Sweat, I think, is going to be a really interesting one to follow as the week goes on, given not only the DUI that happened in recent weeks, but also, I mean, leading into that, there were already whispers around the NFL about what he could bring off the field. Does he have an NFL work ethic? Does he have an NFL mentality? Granted, he was able to calm a lot of those concerns in the past this past season, winning the Outland Trophy and being able to do what he did. But I don't think he answered all of those concerns. And then whenever this DWI happens and it's kind of circles back, then you start thinking about those thoughts that you had going into the year about T'Vondre Sweat. So, I mean, I've seen teams still grade him as high as the second round, and I've seen teams push him back to the fifth round. So I think there's a really big range for him. I think he falls somewhere in the middle, probably late third, early fourth. If he's on the board at 87 and the Cowboys are picking, they don't have a defensive tackle pick yet, I think that would be a really interesting one. They had a formal meeting with him at the combine. Paxton Anderson is obviously in the scouting department, former walk-on of the Texas football program. So he's got a lot of context on Sweat. You can also look at Jalen Ford, a linebacker out of Frisco. Lone Star did really well in his time with the Longhorns. Coulda came out last year, I believe, and still probably had the same draft grade that he has coming in this year. I think he's an early day three guy. I have a fourth round grade on him. I think he's going to be really productive at the next level. Might just need to get a little bit bigger and fill running lanes a little bit more, instinctually. But other than that, I think he's a phenomenal player. The guy in the Texas draft class that I'm higher on than everybody else, though, is Jordan Whittington. I understand what he went through early in his career, coming out of Cuero as a five-star, expecting to be the guy, but then got hurt over and over and over again. Eventually, Texas just had to recruit around him and bring in some guys that they knew could be healthy around him. But then you look at these last two seasons, and Whittington was able to stay on the field. He was able to be healthy when he needed to be called upon on that final drive against Washington to throw that deep ball and, hey, man, go grab this catch so we can at least have a shot to win this game. He was able to do that, and there was a lot of trust in him to be able to do that. I think he's a big-body guy you can go get in the sixth or seventh round, and if it doesn't work on the offensive side of the ball, he could play on special teams for at least five, six, seven seasons.
Nick, I want to ask you about the 2021 Texas recruiting class, because that was probably – it was Tom – technically, Sark only signed two guys, David Abiyara. I guess Keith Ron Lee technically signed with Sark, even though he was a Herman guy, and then Xavier Worthy. But, yeah, I mentioned Keith Ron Lee and Xavier Worthy in the same class. It's probably the toughest class to evaluate because they couldn't get out on the road. They were so restricted. And for a lot of programs, it was a complete crapshoot. But you look at what Texas ended up in that class. Yeah, there's, you know, Ish Ibrahim. And, you know, we talked about Keith Ron Lee. And there's some David Abiyara. There's some kind of unsavory takes in there. But you've also got – you end up with Jatavion Sanders, Xavier Worthy, Byron Murphy, Jordan Brooks, or Jonathan Brooks. I was looking at Jordan Thomas, Jonathan Brooks, Baron Sorrell, Gunnar Helm. I mean, you ended up with, it was a true kind of boomer bust class, but people probably don't want to hear this, but I think you got to give the Tom Herman staff some props, because amid some pretty tough circumstances, they ended up with some damn good evals in that class.
Recruiting was never their problem. And I don't feel like that was ever the problem with Charlie Strong's staff either. It was always development and being able to, once those guys come into the building, be able to put them back out into the first round if they are five-star guys, or into the middle rounds if they are four-star guys. And that was always really difficult for that staff to do. I think that was eventually what led to their demise. But yeah, looking at that class, being able to get Xavier Worthy late, like Sark was able to do, that really definitely did put that cherry on top of the class. It finished 15th overall in 247, but Jatavion, getting him in the building, getting Byron Murphy in the building in that class as well. Jonathan Brooks, you mentioned Gunnar Helm, Hayden Connor. Looking back on the class now, it is fun. It's fun to look at and see the names that did hit and the names that did not hit, because if you had given me, you know, hey, five of these guys are going to be draft picks, I probably only would have gotten about three of them.
Yeah. Let's go. I want to look at NFL big picture. Again, we talk about the first round, the volatility of it. I'll put your GM hat on, your scouting hat on. If you're in that Arizona Cardinals war room at four, do you trade and pick up some picks, or is Marvin Harrison Jr. just that good where you've got to pull the trigger on maybe a generational talent at wide receiver?
Yeah, I think you pulled the trigger there. You look at the picks that they do have. They have the pick at 27 as well. Then they have two early second-round picks. So they do have picks, and they're able to stack some talent in that top 100. I'm sticking at four, and I'm taking Marvin Harrison Jr. But also, I'd be completely okay with Malik Nabers if I'm in that war room and someone's making the argument for it. For me personally, I have Harrison graded just a bit higher, but it's not by much. On my stack, they are literally two and three. So I love Harrison. I think he's going to be awesome at the next level. I think Nabers is as well. But giving Kyler Murray a weapon like that, again, especially a young weapon that can develop with him as he recovers off of his injury and gets used to being back on the field again, I think Arizona is going to be really fun. And in my mock draft, I have them circling back later in the first round at 27 and getting Kool-Aid McKinstry. So to be able to get two guys on both sides of the ball, the skill positions, to be able to solidify both sides of the ball at those positions, that'd be huge for them.
Jordan, you want to get Nick on the record for what your 49ers may or may not do at 31?
Yeah, no, I've talked to him enough about that already. It's some boring shit. That's all the 49ers do is just boring stuff at the end of the first round. So I won't let y'all sit through that. But, you know, being the draft guy pretty much, are there any dudes you're just in love with that are right now like day three guys you're looking at like, okay, what are the main guys that come to name and from where?
The running backs jump off my mind immediately. I'm going to give you a couple of running backs. Isaiah Davis out of South Dakota State, 6'2", 220 pounds. He has these long strides that separate the open field. He had 1,400-plus yards in each of the last two seasons for the back-to-back FCS national champions. Hey, man, he's been getting well-accustomed here in Frisco playing in that FCS national championship. So it'd be fun to have him down here playing for the Cowboys if they wait till day three to go get a running back. I really like what he brings to the table. And then you look at Isaac Garrido, and I know you guys talk a lot about on the recruiting trail you know, track and how that translates not only to the college game, but even to the NFL game as well. Something that has been brought up with him a lot during his draft process, Isaac Garrido, running back out of Louisville, is the time he was a four-time state champion track runner in the state of Indiana. He ran a 10.52 100 meter PR in his time in Indianapolis. And hey, man, for a running back that's sitting there 6 foot, 210 pounds, that's a pretty good time. And to be able to translate that to the NFL, I think there's a lot of teams that are excited about his athleticism that he can bring to the table. Some other dates, you guys.
I was just laughing because I might not even place a district in some districts in Texas.
Texas is different. Texas is different. This is a track state, you know?
Yeah. But, sorry to cut you off, my bad.
No, you're good. You're good. Other positions I'm looking at, offensive tackle. Giovanni Manu, who's out of the University of British Columbia. He came in to the Cowboys for a 30 visit. He's 6'8", 320 pounds, and he does not have a lick of fat on him. He is shredded. He's got the tribal Samoan sleeve on his arm. I mean, he's bald. He looks mean. And he played tackle, obviously, for a Canadian college, but he's picking up a lot of steam in draft circles. He's probably going to end up being a day three pick. His pro day that he did up in British Columbia had 27 teams from the NFL up there, and he showed out. His athletic numbers jumped off the board. I believe he had a 35-inch vertical, which for that size is absolutely unreal. Athletic freak. He's a guy I really like on day three. And then also last name I'll give you is Edifon Olafosio out of Washington, linebacker. I think he's a guy there on day three that's really productive. You know what you're getting whenever he gets in the building. High character guy. And he's potentially a guy there in the sixth round that you could go grab and put in that second level to be on a 53-man roster.
Yeah, Nick, two more Texas guys I want to ask you about that I don't think you got to the first time. Xavier Worthy. It seems like maybe somebody gets back into the first round to get him, but probably early two is where he's going. And I've heard a lot of different opinions on Christian Jones. I've heard some people that like him maybe in the second round. Some people that think he might go in the fourth round. Where are you at on Christian Jones? And with Jones, I've also heard the potential of maybe kicking inside the guard in the NFL.
Yeah, I'll start with Jones because I've heard the same kind of things. Yeah, I think it's a situation where you get him in during training camp or OTAs and you work him at both positions and you kind of figure out which one he's more comfortable at as time goes on. I think for me personally, I'd like to see him at guard just to kind of – he has that wide body frame you love to have in the interior, and he still has the athleticism that if he needs to kick out to tackle in a depth or an injury situation, he can still do that. For me personally, I do have an early fourth on him, but I think his experience and what he can bring to the table from that standpoint, I think he's worth taking a late third round pick on. And I don't even consider that a flyer necessarily. Xavier Worthy, he's going to be picked in the first round. I think I'm confident in that. Good. But I just don't know where. You look at a team like – you could go as early as the Raiders because the Raiders just do wild things in the draft every single year that make no sense. And I was trying to think about it today, like what could be the Jahmyr Gibbs of this year as far as, you know, Gibbs got 12 last year and no one thought he would even make it above 25. So who could be that this year? And I was like, well, it could be Xavier Worthy going to the Raiders because that just makes sense. But you could also see him as far back as 32 going to the Chiefs. I think that's a situation where if he's there at 24, the Cowboys kind of use Xavier Worthy as leverage. Like, hey, Buffalo, hey, Kansas City, hey, Washington, all you teams that are wanting to come up and get a receiver. Xavier Worthy's here and maybe Brian Thomas Jr. as well. But I think the one concern that everybody has around Xavier Worthy that if he didn't have this concern, he would be a surefire top 25 pick would be the fact that he's 165 pounds. I mean, he saw him come out of games a lot last year. There was a couple of times, I believe it was in the Tech game, where it looked like he had just like shattered his ankle. And then he was right back on the field like two drives later. And it's like, dog, we need you on the field, you know? So I think that's the one concern. But man, 4.21 speed, it's unreal.
Yeah, Stu mentions it 3 years ago. Could you imagine Christian Jones being a top 100 pick? I couldn't have imagined Christian Jones sniffing the NFL 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So that's a tribute to Kyle Flood. Nick, as we wrap it up here, man, anybody from the Texas high school ranks, because I know you, Jordan's in your shoes now. You had more miles, saw more high school games probably than anybody else while you were covering recruiting. Anybody from that Texas high school football fraternity that you're just, other than Jonathan Brooks, that you're excited just to see where they go, how high they go, and maybe you're higher on them than maybe some other people?
Yeah, Byron Murphy, obviously, as well. Really excited to see where he ends up. Ennis Rakestraw out of Missouri, the corner. Man, his recruiting journey was so much fun out of Duncanville because coming out of the early signing period in his signing class, I believe he was in 2020, He didn't have a lot going on. I believe he had one FBS offer and a couple of FCSs, and that was probably where he was looking at. He was probably looking at like a Morgan State is what he was looking at. And then he had that performance against Jackson Smith and Jigba in the state semifinal game that year where he was able to lock him down. I always, because I'm kind of a Rockwall guy, you know me, but I always kind of thought there was a little bit of bracket coverage going on that day. But we're talking about Ennis Rakestraw here, so I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. He blew up after that. And then the very next week playing in that state championship game, what he was able to do then, Missouri, Alabama, Texas, Texas A&M, Georgia, they all came flying in. And the hats that were on the table for him on signing day in February were Missouri, Alabama, and Texas. And he could have committed to any three of those schools, but he went to Missouri because Missouri was the first one that had kind of talked to him and shown him some love, during that process. So really excited to see where he lands. He's looking to be a second, third round pick potentially. Some even have him going late first round. I would love to be able to see that for him. Really good kid too. Gosh, I'm trying to think of some more off the top of my head. Jordan, you might be able to think of them quicker than I would.
Yeah, so Nick, this is more so for me. I remember seeing you kind of a couple weeks ago and during the combine tweet out a bunch about 30 visits or 30-day visits, whatnot. Can you just kind of explain it for dummies? I know you've already explained it to me, but kind of just explain it for dummies. And also, you talked about the other day with Jonathan Brooks and his 30-day visit showing him around. So I guess just on that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So a 30 visit, what each NFL team is allowed to do, they're allowed to have a local day before the 30 visits where they can basically bring in any draft prospect that A, played college in the metro area or played high school in the metro area. So, for teams like Dallas, Atlanta, and Houston, that's a really big advantage. But for teams like Green Bay or Buffalo or,
Minnesota.
Minnesota, they might be scraping the bottom of the barrel a little bit. But they're able to do that. And then they're also able to bring in 30 prospects outside of those metro areas to be able to just kind of bring in. They host them throughout the day. They take them through like a car wash style interview process with the head coach, position coach, scouting director, Jerry Jones, all of that. And then they meet with the media. They do a lot of other things as well. Jonathan Brooks was one of those 30 visit guys, since he technically wasn't a metro guy. He's from Hallettsville and went to school in Austin. But he came in, man, the Cowboys really like him. Again, if he's there at 56, I'd be shocked, completely shocked if he is not the pick. They love what he brings from an instinctual standpoint. They're really looking for smart mental guys, and he checks all those boxes for them. He doesn't have a lot of tread on his tires to their perspective. I mean, for me, I think back to the 1,000 carries that he took at Hallettsville, but you look at what he did in college. He only had one season of starting experience at Texas. So taking that to the NFL, a lot of teams really like that. Just kind of seeing him and being able to catch up with him again, it's really cool. He's gone through quite a bit during his time in Texas. He lost his father last year, and he was able to play this past season for him. And so just being able to catch up with him more in depth, just how he's been, how his brothers, or not his brothers, his cousins, Doug and Dalton, are doing, those state championship heroes from Shiner a couple of years ago, seeing how they're doing and just kind of catching up on life. It was good to see him.
Nick, with Paxton now, you mentioned Paxton Anderson's on the scouting side with the Cowboys.
Yeah.
They took Connor Williams a few years ago. Malik Jefferson's been in that organization for a few years. They drafted DeMarvin Overshown. If they take Jonathan Brooks, can we finally just bury – are we getting to the point where we can bury the urban legend, the myth that the Cowboys hate taking Texas guys?
Yeah, 100%. I think that hatchet has been buried because – they went into the draft last year very similarly to how they are going into this draft with Jonathan Brooks. They went into last year wanting to get DeMarvin Overshown, and they were able to do that in the third round. I mean, that was probably the most surefire pick going into last year's draft, and now it's another Texas guy doing the same exact thing this year. You would hope so if you're the Cowboys, right? So, yeah, I think so. And you call back to what they were able to display at their pro day back in March, and how many teams that they had in attendance, how many scouts that they had in attendance, and just kind of talking to scouts there at the pro day being like, this is nothing we've ever seen at the University of Texas. It's a big time program. I mean, it's not like we're talking about, I mean, I don't want to slam dunk another program here, but it's not like we're talking about a low level P5 program, but it's typical that some of these guys that come out of Texas, they go into the NFL and typically do not get that second contract. But I think there's a lot more positivity with the Sarkisian staff as far as development, what they've been able to do on the field, and obviously getting to the playoff last year was a big help too.
I'm disappointed, Jordan. You just missed a chance to dunk on Dave Aranda. So,
yeah, well, I was going to let him do it. But no, Nick, I know you got to run soon. But, you know, you were East Texas, Dallas guy who followed the Cowboys pretty closely. Now you're in the building, right? This will be your second draft with them. You started just about a week or two before the draft last year with them. Now that you're in the building, you see kind of – I know you're not seeing everything, but you see how a lot of decisions are made or how they come to be made. Who are kind of the unsung heroes that never get any credit with the Cowboys in the draft? Because all the fans talk about is Jerry effing it up or his son, Stephen Jones, or grandson, whatnot. You know, who are the unsung heroes that really don't get a ton of credit?
I wouldn't say that this is necessarily an unsung hero, but someone that is a big part of the draft process and why the Cowboys have been able to draft so well over the course of the last decade. Look at the roster from last season, 9 all pros, and I believe all 9 of them were draft picks. So you look at that and you evaluate that, or excuse me, 8 of them were draft picks. You evaluate that and you say, okay, there's somebody that's doing something right in the draft room, and it's Will McClay, the vice president of player personnel. He's a Rice grad. He's from the state of Texas. He worked with the he's been working with the Cowboys organization for almost 2 decades now. But he's the one that kind of runs the scouting department, and his staff does such a great job of evaluating prospects from January to December. I mean, draft season is year round for them, very similar to how recruiting season is year round for you guys. And it's a big part of why they have been able to draft so well, so much so that every single year teams are requesting Will McClay for GM interviews, and he's been turning them down. But his kid is graduating high school this year, and you know, there might be an opportunity for him to move on next year. But who knows? This could be the last draft for Will McClay. But if it's not, then the Cowboys do have that guy in their draft room that they can continue to rely on year after year to be able to scout the right player. Now, the 2023 draft class, by all accounts and measures, was probably the worst in the NFL. But you take that out of the equation and you look at what he did in 2022 with getting Deron Bland, getting Jake Ferguson, getting Micah Parsons and all of those type of guys. I mean, it's really been able to help what they've been able to do on the field.
Nick, I'll throw one out there, somebody that's in the building, and I'm only throwing him out there because when I go to games, it seems like he's at a college game. I see him multiple times a year. Chris Hall's been with the Cowboys for 3 decades, and that dude's seen a lot, done a lot, experienced a lot, but Chris Hall's another one of those guys that I don't know if the casual Cowboys fan knows about Chris Hall, but he plays a really pivotal role.
Yeah, Chris Hall, Sam Garza, Mitch LaPointe, all of those are the scouting staff that work hand in hand with Will McClay every single day. Chris Hall's a really good dude. He's a man of faith. You see him around, he's always got a smile on his face, and he's nice to everybody around this building. I'll catch him in the cafeteria sometimes, and we'll just chop it up about college football. But yeah, he's a good dude too.
Nick, I just want to tell everybody, say for the record, man, I'm proud of you, what you're doing, man. You know, the Horns 24/7 pipeline, it's damn good. And, you know, Mike was a part of that pipeline. You're a part of that pipeline. Jordan's in there now. Hank's in there now. So, I told you this a long time ago. I tell Jordan this. I'm going to be there until, like, I'm basically going to be the Chris Hall of Horns 24/7. I'm going to be there running stuff until somebody tells me, hey, your services are no longer needed, and then I won't bitch and complain. I'll just pack my stuff up and go to the house. So,
hey, man. Yeah. I appreciate it, Jeff. It's always a pleasure to come back and talk to you guys. I saw Chip at the Pro Day as well, and you guys too, and it was just – it's always great to catch up. I honestly, truthfully, one of the best times I've had in my career, 100%. I miss it every day.
No, it's good. It's good, man. So,
Nick, I got to run. This will be my last one. Yeah. We're talking about how the Cowboys are just in love with Jonathan Brooks from head to toe, kind of like they were with DeMarvin Overshown.
Yeah.
How big of a factor does Jeff Choate having coached Overshown or Tashard Choice having coached Brooks, like, do the Cowboys look at guys like that who have produced other players who have had a lot of success in the NFL and, like, not necessarily, like, stamp the guy, but they'll feel more comfortable? Like, what does that necessarily look like? Also, Tashard Choice is a former Cowboy, too. So,
yeah. In evaluation, you could take this in recruiting or in draft evaluation. The more context you have, the better. And if part of the context is the fact that his position coach has put out this many first-rounders or this many productive NFL guys, yeah, that makes an impact. With Tashard Choice, I think it plays a little bit more into the Jonathan Brooks love because they loved Bijan Robinson last year. They just were never going to be able to draft him. So there's a lot of connections that Tashard Choice has been able to make for the Cowboys with Jonathan Brooks. And I think if he is the pick at 56, that's going to be a big reason why, is because they trust Tashard. They trust his development and they trust his eye as well.
Yeah, it also helps when he was drafted by that organization too, coming out of Georgia Tech, and was at 2009. Nick, I'll say too, you're a man after my heart. I don't know what room you're set up in, but the fact you got 4 Jimmy Johnson pictures over your shoulders, That's a look. Some Cowboys fans say, "Oh, Tom Landry was my coach." No, man, Jimmy Johnson was my coach in my fandom with the Cowboys.
It's funny because they have different meeting rooms here with all of the different Super Bowl winning coaches.
Yeah.
And Landry was taken across the hallway here. And so I had between Switzer and Johnson, and I was like, Texas podcast, let me go in Johnson. That was my cohesive thought.
I'm a Jimmy Johnson guy. Nick, anything else you think is just top of mind, or anything you need to plug? I know you.
Any hot draft takes you got?
Or I know you and Patrick Walker. Patrick's another part of the 24/7 Sports family. He was there doing the Cowboys site for a while. Any projects you need to plug, or anything you're involved in with the Cowboys?
Yeah, just keep locked in with DallasCowboys.com and my Twitter, Nick Harris DC. We have a draft show that starts an hour before the draft, and it runs all the way through the draft each day. So getting ready to be on the air about 15, 16 hours this weekend. It's going to be fun, but I'm excited for it.
When are we going to see you in the war room, Nick? They're going to let you call in the card or something?
Hey, man, that would be the day I get fired probably.
Nick, it's great to see you, man. Always good to see you. And, dude, enjoy the hell out of this weekend, man. This is what it's all about.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys.
Yes, right, sir. We'll have to do it again.
Yes, sir. Let's do it.
Nick Harris, DallasCowboys.com is where you can find Nick. Nick is good people, man. Great dude. Hard worker, man. That's the thing you and Nick have in common, Jordan, is I'll say this, you included. I don't know that I've ever worked with anybody that's as much of a news hound as Nick, that just enjoyed just getting out there and unearthing news and finding nuggets. So Nick's a good example for you to follow in that realm. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, my thing – so I'll give you all a little story. I met Nick when I was doing videography and photography full time, but I didn't really know what I wanted to do with myself or what kind of direction I wanted to take it in. At the time, I was doing pretty much every big name that would come out of Austin. I would do their commitment video, or I'd work with them at some form of doing media. And I ran into Nick. I'd always been into recruiting, and I got put in this big ass Instagram group chat with him about recruiting, and he was in it, and I was like, oh shit, it's this dude that works for 24/7, but he would never talk in it. He was never active, so I'm like, okay, they probably just threw him in there. But I'm at this Lake Travis Arlington Martin game in 2021, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's the dude that works for 24/7. Mm-hmm. And I walk up to him, and I'm just like, are you Nick Harris? And he's like, yeah. We kind of start talking, and basically, like within a week, I just became his number one source in Austin. I didn't know. I didn't have a problem telling him what I knew. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I trusted him to do it the right way, just like most of my people trust me to do it the right way. Right. And as time went on, we started kind of, I was going to games for more so photography, videography. He was going to it for recruiting. And we tried to be at the same game so we could save some money on a hotel or whatnot. We just became like best friends. And then that January, I was like, dude, I like the photography, videography world a lot. Like, I still enjoy a lot of parts of that. But my thing is, like, I'm not going to college. And two, I can't raise a family off of like random Venmos. And because in photography and stuff, you know, you could make 4K in 1 week and then go 4 weeks without a gig.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So, and I'm just like, you can't. I'm trying to get out of my parents' house. You can't raise a family on that down the road. So I just got to thinking. I was playing Xbox with Nick one night, and it was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And he suggested getting in recruiting. And then he'd take me under his wing. And, yeah, that's kind of what happened, and we're here now. So, but, hey, if it wasn't for that random-ass Arlington Martin Lake Travis game, I couldn't tell you what the hell I'd be doing right now. And if I never met Nick, I couldn't tell you what the hell I'd be doing right now, because I genuinely don't know.
I am sitting in the chair I am sitting in because I answered a post on a rivals.com message board 20 years ago. That's how it all started. Real quick, not to get too sappy, but we'll bring
the guys in after this. Sorry, yeah. Y'all are waiting. My bad.
Oh, when you look, we talked with Nick about the Texas guys, and I think for the most part, he's pretty spot on with, I think, where everybody's going to go. You know, Byron Murphy could go into the top. I've heard Matt Miller and some other guys talk about Byron Murphy maybe going into the top 10. You know, like, it's a situation with Atlanta at 8. If they can't decide between pass rushers, they might just decide, well, the safest bet for an impact D lineman might be Byron Murphy over Dallas Turner or the other rushers they're looking at. You know, hit. Nick saying Xavier Worthy going in the first round is interesting because every mocker, you hear about A.D. Mitchell being kind of a safe top 25-ish pick, but I could see, depending on where that run of receiver starts, I think is going to determine where X goes. You know, if you see the Brian Thomases and A.D. Mitchell's available, like in the late 20s, maybe X goes early second round, but I don't know, maybe somebody just decides the value's too good to pass up. I'll tell you this, man, if the late Al Davis was still alive, dude, Xavier Worthy to the Raiders would be the biggest slam dunk, no doubt pick in this draft. The Combine King, wide receiver, punt return guy, hell yes, Al Davis would be standing on the table for Xavier Worthy.
Yeah, just the thing that scares me about Xavier Worthy going to Las Vegas is that Xavier Worthy is going to be living in Las Vegas. You know what I mean? Like, and it's really nothing to do with Xavier Worthy, but like, there isn't a single 21, 22, 23-year-old I'd feel comfortable about living in Vegas if I'm about to pay them a bunch of millions of dollars because I just drafted
them. In the Texas draft class, Byron Murphy and Christian Jones are about the only two dudes I would feel safe if they got drafted to the Raiders. Like, I don't really worry about those two guys. I think they got their heads screwed on pretty straight.
Yeah.
Everybody's a crapshoot. CB's question is, we bring in Eric and Keenan for false start. How far do Sweat and Sanders fall? Tavondre Sweat's a complete crapshoot at this point. Because like Nick was saying, he could get to the late three. He could get to the late third round. And somebody could just decide that, dude, the value is just too good to pass up. I think he probably goes early four. With Sanders, again, it depends on Eric. I don't know how much mock draft stuff, Keenan, I don't know how much mock draft stuff you've looked at or looked into it. Everybody on the planet knows Brock Bowers is TE1. Tight end two, some people think it's Sanders. Some people think it's Ben Stidham from Kansas State. Some people think it's Jared Wiley from TCU. Some people think it's the kid from Arizona. I guess it just depends on who decides to take a tight end after Brock Bowers and how does their board stand?
Jeff, I said this, and I can't remember if this was on air with Keenan yesterday or just kind of in a separate chat. That conversation does kind of intrigue me a bit. And listen, I'll admit, I'm a little stubborn when it comes to these things, Jeff and Jordan. JT's bench press number, like, look, bench press isn't necessarily indicative of physical strength on the field and what you're going to be asked to do. And ideally, if you're using JT Sanders as an inline tight end 70% of the time, using him wrong, right? Yeah. But that number does scare me off. I could see it scaring off some people a little bit. But to what you just said, I don't think Jared Wiley's, and you guys would know this better than me, but just from what I saw, I don't think Jared Wiley's a better pro prospect than JT Sanders. To me, he's a clear number two. It's a matter of where he falls and how teams are going to use him, you know?
Yeah, I think if you're looking for weight room numbers and stuff like that, you probably take Jared Wiley. But if you're just looking for the best football player, I think you take Sanders.
Yeah. What if I told you me and the Lake Travis Cavaliers 2021 7-on-7 team just got molested by Jared Wiley's Temple 7-on-7 team? With Jared Wiley playing quarterback, dog. I'm telling you. I seriously thought, I had no idea who he was, and I seriously thought he was like a top 100 prospect at quarterback. And then we come back to the sidelines. My dad is like, no, that kid's committed to play Texas or play tight end at Texas.
Yeah.
It's like, Jesus
functional
Christ.
Functional athlete, man. He was a hell of a baseball player, too.
Yeah, I remember hearing that he was a really good baseball player. I mean, so many of those guys are two-sport athletes or could be in a different world, you know. Yeah.
I'm telling you, hey, Temple in 254.
There you go. Where'd you get that? I need you to give me that hoodie. That's what I need.
It's actually one of Micah Hudson's hoodies. He sent me a box of all this stuff, so. Yeah, not gonna lie to you. So,
I appreciate the honesty. All right,
he's got a lot of 254 branded stuff though. If you want to go look at his NIL Pro Shop,
well, I need to see what sizes he's got, and I may go give Micah Hudson some NIL money, and I'm gonna give Maurice Blackwell some NIL money, even though he doesn't have the long sleeve shirts. I'll give Mo Blackwell some NIL money for that Slim Reaper shirt. I think it would just be a nice oxymoron if I wore that around.
the Slim Reaper.
At any rate, Eric Keenan, you guys have a good show, man. It's a false start. We're out of here. Draft day, we'll be doing it big tomorrow. We're going to take it out. Boys, have a good show.
Yes, sir. Y'all have a good one.